Back together again, you and I, chatting it up Thursday style, the 28th of August, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. We looked at a controversial response from Connecticut U.S. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy regarding Wednesday's deadly mass shooting at a church in Minneapolis. CBS News reporter Aaron Navarro joined us from D.C. to detail the possibility of more National Guard troops heading to other U.S. cities. Southern Connecticut State University political science and urban affairs professor Dr. Jonathan Warden dropped by with his current take on the Connecticut and national political scenes, while retired corrections officer and current GOP state senator Paul Ciccarella updated us on this week's attack on a corrections officer by an inmate at the Cheshire Correctional Institution.
Well, it turns out I was mistaken. I thought, and silly me to even think this for all the years I've been watching these people, watching these clowns, and thinking that there would be better angels among them. I actually thought we could go a day or two without people politicizing, people on the left mainly, Democrats on the left, politicizing what happened to those poor kids and those adults yesterday in Minneapolis. Two people dead, 17 others hurt, two children dead, 17 others hurt, 14 of those kids. You know the story by now. So I thought, I said, well, all right, maybe there are better people among us who can be, geez, I don't know, incensed by something, but still say, hey, let me wait a little while because I'm not really going to break any new ground here. But I was wrong. And it never fails when we have a tragedy like this that there are people salivating, and I mean drooling. I mean, there are people salivating. They see dead kids. They see dead people. They say, okay, what political point can I make here? In other words, I can't just put a sock in it and be a better person because I have to get out there in front and make a fool of myself, which is essentially, I'm going to give you two examples here of just stuff that you just, why? Why? Let's start with example one here. And, of course, for idiocy, Chris Murphy never fails. You know what they say, consistency in life is a good thing. Well, I got to tell you, if Chris Murphy runs for the White House and wins, I will have years and years and years of show material. My shows will write themselves. Let me present to you a guy who was supposed to represent all of us, a guy who you would think could put a sock in it for a day and let these people mourn instead of getting up there and deciding what freaking left-wing political point I can make of this, because, of course, I'm not officially running, but I'm officially running for the White House. What am I going to say that's going to sound good on MSNBC and help me raise money? Oh, you think I'm being a bit much here? Well, I will play you this segment, and I've got different segments of him coming up during the show. I didn't want to play the whole thing because that would have induced too much nausea, and you would have puked all over your car dashboard or your desk at work or your kitchen right now. So I don't want to do that to you. So I'm going to introduce the Chris Murphy nausea in little bite-sized chunks here. He's on. Oh, you're being a little rough, Paul. I am. Let me play this for you. This is Chris Murphy, a guy who's got designs on the White House, a guy who was supposed to represent even the people that didn't vote for him, right? The 40 or 42 or 45% of people in Connecticut that didn't vote for him. So he's on with Chris Hayes on MSNBC. Nothing wrong with going on a national channel. He does have some gravitas. What does Chris Murphy think? Okay. So he tries to, and I will let you listen to this for yourself. I'm not going to put words in anybody's mouth. There's no creative editing here on my part. I took a chunk of this. You'll get where he's going here. You know who caused that tragic shooting yesterday? Where two kids were killed, another few kids seriously hurt, 14 kids in all injured, three adults killed. You know who caused that yesterday? Of course, say it all together with me, Donald John Trump.
The long story of the human race is a story about a reduction in violence.
Yeah.
Right? We are a violent species. We've used violence over the millennia in order to advance ourselves and protect ourselves. But we made a decision long ago that that's not how we wanted to live. And so we decided to put in place a set of rules and norms that made violence much less likely. And that's been our story in the United States and across the world. But what is happening now with Donald Trump in charge is a fetishization of violence, a celebration of violence. It starts when he loses the election and decides to use violence to try to install himself in power permanently. It's his response to an unsecure border. It's the people with guns patrolling the capital city. And so you now have a country that sees violence, lethality, as the way to deal with almost every problem. And that ultimately plays out in the way that broken brains start to contemplate the way to exercise their demons as well. So we just need to get back to what, you know, Steven Pinker called our better angels. And that's the hard work of trying to find ways other than violence to deal with conflict. Donald Trump is engaged in a daily celebration of violence, and that has impacts on our politics and on our culture.
How embarrassing. How embarrassing that voters in Connecticut actually voted for him. I mean, at this point. Now, if he changes his tone, who knows? On a day where kids are killed and wounded and maimed and injured, he's got to go on MSNBC and essentially, if I heard that correctly, attach those deaths and injuries to Donald Trump. What a jerk. I'm sorry, Senator, if your people are listening, whatever, give me a call. You're a jerk. You can't stuff a sock in it for a couple of days. My God. You know what's happening here, people? And I've got more. This is my first couple of hours theme. And let me know what you think. Chris Murphy, right? Maybe you think he's right. I think he just was the lowest of low class that you could have had yesterday. Now he doesn't like Trump. I get that. That's not the point. You're attaching Donald Trump to what this transgender psycho did in Minneapolis? Come on, Chris. You're that desperate to get in the White House? Jesus H, are you kidding me? Well, Trump pushes people over the edge. Yeah, you know he's pushed over the edge? Your entire party, Senator. Your entire party is cracking up. Your entire party is going crazy. There's a new poll out I'll read to you from the Associated Press. Hardly a left-wing organization saying, you know what? A lot of people like what Trump is doing on crime, and they like what he's doing with troops in the cities. But Chris Murphy, who purports to, I guess you would hope, with some grace and some statesman-like things, who purports to even represent the people who didn't vote for him? He goes on and says that? God, can you be any more of a creep? 2033. Oh, by the way, you think that's bad? Hang on. I'll be back in a minute. You think that's bad? Wait till you hear what a state Democratic leader said. Oh, you think Murphy was bad? Wait till you hear what I have coming up.
And so you now have a country that sees violence, lethality, as the way to deal with almost every problem. And that ultimately plays out in the way that broken brains start to contemplate the way to exercise their demons as well. So we just need to get back to what, you know, Steven Pinker called our better angels. And that's the hard work of trying to find ways other than violence to deal with conflict. Donald Trump is engaged in a daily celebration of violence, and that has impacts on our politics and on our culture.
My God, he couldn't wait a day. He couldn't wait. He couldn't wait. How can I tie in the deaths and injuries of children to Donald Trump? When if he had, now I don't know whether he didn't have the details or not, but this psycho in Minneapolis, I guess part of his ammunition or ammunition clips had killed Trump on there, reportedly, by the images we're seeing in the reporting. So, Senator, we know you salivate at the notion of banging Donald Trump here, but my God, oh, how him? Even if you detest Trump and you're a Democrat, you've got to be nauseous over that. And this is how Trump wins. Do you understand? Is Chris Murphy that freaking dumb that he doesn't understand that this plays right into Trump's hands? Oh my God. Trump's breaking the Democratic Party. He is, especially on crime. I have a state legislator statement, too. This is the kind of thing that's just going to, it's going to make you nauseous. It is. A very powerful state legislator. Somebody stuck their head in the studio right before we came back, said, let me guess who that state legislator is. I said, go ahead. Is it? I said, yes, it is. First, though, Andy's with us. Andy, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Hi, my friend. You know I'm crazy about you, right?
Thank you.
But I got to challenge you.
Yeah?
When you refer to our junior Senator Murphy as a clown or a creep,
okay,
you insult good clowns and good creeps all over the country. Now, this guy is sick.
It's just sad. How do you do that?
I can't believe what he's saying.
How do you do that?
It's just like a total, parallel universe. Gaslighting. He teach a gaslighting course at Quinnipiac when he's not campaigning?
Gaslighting 101 with Senator Murphy.
I mean, they're taking murderers, child rapists, thieves off the street. Naturally, they're going to have some kind of firearm for self-protection. Yeah. And he calls that violence. He calls that the promotion of violence.
And somehow,
what
Andy,
is wrong with this guy?
Well, he's got a new girlfriend. He's got a beard now, and he wants to be president. So he's hitting on all cylinders, Andy. It is what it is, my friend.
Yeah. Right, but let me let you go. But listen, I really want you, after I hang up, to issue a blanket apology to creeps and clowns.
I'll have to see, Andy, if that's in my contract. Thank you, sir, if I can do that. Oh, my God. Come on, Senator. Really? Really? They have to tie Trump into this. They have to. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, here's the thing. Trump is winning on crime. He is. Now, coming up, there's a new poll that came out yesterday, ironically, after the Quinnipiac poll that said people, didn't like what Trump was doing on crime. Well, there's another poll. But, my God, what is wrong with, and I say this about conservatives, too. Anybody around, you listen to me on the air here, even people like Chris or that I talk to or around the station about, stuff in the news. And if there's an idiot Republican, Marjorie Taylor Greene, if there are dumb Republicans, Lauren Boebert, I tell them to shut the up. You're being an idiot. But Chris Murphy, oh, my God. But again, it seems to be working. There was another feature article about, where did I write? I clicked on it the other day. It was on the Capitol Report. There's the Murphy firebrand of Democrats. He's got $12 million in the bank. Well, okay, then maybe. But what a low-class thing. I mean, look. I understand Chris Murphy is part of the grand opposition here. I get it. But how about you have a little bit of class, just a smidgen, as they say, a skosh of class, Senator. Now, when we come back, if you think what Chris Murphy said was bad, wait till you hear, and it's right on his Facebook page, you can go look at it, what a rather prominent, powerful Fairfield County lawmaker has to say about yesterday, about the death of children yesterday. And thankfully, there are hundreds of people on his Facebook page calling him out for the creepy thing he said. So there is decency among people, maybe not among some people in the leadership in the state Democratic Party. I wanted to check in with one of our fine CBS friends in D.C., Our buddy Aaron Navarro on the line. Aaron, good afternoon. Have they told you now, Aaron, that there will be no more news from now until Tuesday? Did you get that memo yet?
Yeah, the Labor Day news pause. President Trump big on that always. No, every day is a little different here.
Yeah, keep the coffee going. All right, Aaron, what are you guys and gals in the D.C. press corps and the White House contingent hearing about Mr. Trump saying, hey, this is working out so well in D.C., the mayor loves it, everybody's on board with it now, we may be sending National Guard troops to different cities. Is this just posturing, Aaron, or is this really going to happen?
I mean, it's definitely consistent with their messaging on crime, as you've seen President Trump go after Baltimore and Chicago and the Democratic leaders and mayors and governors there pretty incessantly. We heard from the White House, quote, border czar, Tom Homan, saying that they're looking at a naval station about an hour north of Chicago, actually kind of close to where I grew up, saying that that will be where they will house the National Guard, so that those plans are still in the works. I think it's important to note, though, that the National Guard in what we could potentially see in Chicago will be more so what we saw in L.A. rather than what's happening in D.C. There is a special control that the White House and the president has when it comes to D.C. But in L.A., what we saw from the National Guard was more so them protecting immigration agents as they're conducting raids and arrests, protecting federal buildings. The indication is that that could be something more in line with what we would see in Chicago, and which is more so in the legal purview of the president.
And finally, Aaron Navarro, there's always the political, the pure campaign looking ahead to 2028 and 2026, where you and I know, you from covering it every day, me from doing shows like this, that Mr. Trump loves to, you know, pull the rope-a-dope here, an old boxing metaphor here, where, you know, maybe hooking big city Democratic mayors into trying to position them, saying, hey, what are you, why are you mad at me? I'm just trying to lower crime in your cities. So a lot of this is a big political game, isn't it?
Part of it. At the same time, there is some nuance there in that we just heard from Vice President Vance during an event in Wisconsin say that, you know, they still want to be invited, that they believe that when the Democratic mayors and governors are actually working with the White House, that it can actually help with the process and reducing crime. At the same time, if you look at the states where he has gone after the governors, California, home to Governor Newsom, Illinois, home to Governor J.B. Pritzker, Baltimore and Maryland, home to Governor Westmore. These are all potential 2028 candidates. So President Trump is definitely getting his insults and his licks out while he can.
All right, Aaron, thanks. Be good. Have a good weekend. Fire up the grill, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, there you go. Love having this guy on to get his rather unique perspective on all things local and national in politics. Dr. Jonathan Warden, Associate Professor of Political Science and Urban Affairs and Sociology Department Chair at Southern Connecticut State University. John, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for adding that new title now that I'm the department chair. Sorry I couldn't get on earlier, but, you know, first week of school, I'm just slammed.
Well, yeah. So how's it? Now, what level are you teaching, John? Fresh, first year people, grads? What do you teach?
Normally I would, but since I've taken on, as you said, you know, the sociology department chair now for this year, I'm sticking to my night classes. So no more intro to the freshmen, which I will probably miss, but won't have to take nearly as much Tylenol.
You'll switch to a new pain reliever. Hey, John, before we get to the upcoming races and everything, what is your take here? You worked on the Hill. I know you worked in Washington. So obviously you're out and about in the nation's capital, much of which is a beautiful place. I've been to the museums down there, all the touristy stuff. And Muriel Bowser comes out yesterday and says, well, yeah, it's kind of, you know, these National Guard people, they are helping. How do you frame this in your own mind? And what should people really know about D.C. here? And maybe how Trump is, I don't know, is he baiting Democrats? Should they be, instead of opposing him on this, John, should they be calling his bluff? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's interesting because my first publications were actually centering around Washington, D.C. and statehood, which is, you know, pretty controversial for local level politics because Washington is a big anomaly. It's very unusual because they have very limited home rule or local control. So this is really unprecedented to have not just the federal government involved in this, but the White House directly. And so this is going to be really uncharted territory as to the direction where things go. And of course, what's taking place in D.C. compared to what he's been trying to pronounce, at least Donald Trump, towards Chicago and New mm-hmm. York would be even more unusual, as we all know. I think in some instances, it could be helpful in having something like the National Guard there. But then we have issues, obviously, with police.
Sure.
What is the communication going to be like between, it's certainly law enforcement across mm-hmm. all agencies now. Yeah.
But I wonder, John, from a political point of view, a tactical point of view, he's kind of chumming the water out there, right? Isn't he, for politics, saying, well, let me see how a guy like Wes Moore, possible candidate, J.B. Pritzker, Gavin Newsom, is he kind of almost in the pregame show for whoever, succeeds him in 2028? Because to me, that's a lot of what this is about. I could be wrong.
Oh, I'm a firm believer in that. And look, this is nothing new, because this is Trump's M.O., is that he puts it out there first, way ahead of time.
Yeah.
Even before the midterm elections, just to see and get the temperature on everything mm-hmm. and to gain attention, obviously media attention.
Yeah.
And people like you are all on it, obviously, for a reason. You know, it does create the sense of that he can be the one in control and having, direction where the narrative goes.
Mm. Let's bring it home here a little bit. The governor's race now, Mr. Lamont, still, depending upon who I talk to on and off the record, say he's probably running. He hasn't declared yet. But the Republican side with so far Jen Tooker and Ryan Fazio and Mayor Stewart there, soon to be departing Mayor Stewart. How do you assess the whole thing, John? We're a bit ways out now, but not really. It's flying by.
Oh, I'm obsessed about this, Paul. Now you're getting right in my wheelhouse. Now we're talking.
All right.
Yeah. Hey, let's face it, man. You already know this. This is the only reason why you didn't lean on me. It's few people even follow the state and local stuff, and to me,
yeah,
I'm all about this timeline.
Yeah.
Remember a few months ago, it was said that our governor was going to make the announcement mm. after legislative session.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Paul, last time I looked at the calendar, September's next week.
Yeah.
So is it one of these things where there's a missing moving target here in terms of when he'll announce it will be after legislative session? I mean, after special session, which
yeah.
we still don't know what it's going to be. It's September. I mean, even here in October.
Yeah.
Or will he keep on, waiting it even longer? And meanwhile, as everything's going on, as you said, you have Aaron Stewart's interest and obviously Ryan Fazio just announced. And then don't forget, obviously, that the governor might have some internal competition.
Yeah.
With Josh Elliott.
Yeah, Josh Elliott.
For the nomination with the Democrats. Yeah. So then he's put himself out there this summer. So this timing factor is so important. And I just don't quite know what the angle is with the governor right now.
Maybe it's funny.
You know more than I do.
No, John, it's funny because I talk to people who, and I have other regular pundits on the show, who seem to think, you're not going to see a Mom Donnie thing here. Josh Elliott's got no shot. You think, I don't know, John, I don't know.
Well, let's say this. We already know with the progressive wing of the Democrats in Connecticut, they have been very outspoken about the governor's stance or concerns and how he vetoed the housing legislation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And certainly Elliott, among others, because there's a plethora of other people, especially lawmakers, who've been very outspoken about that. Mm-hmm. And so you're getting that kind of response automatically by many of the progressives out there saying mm-hmm. that he needs to do something about this and get out there. And that's why I'm telling you this special session is going to be really centering on this. And the progressive wing is going to make it known. They already are, but probably even more so. In September, October, whenever this takes place.
Yeah, and finally, John, and the guest is Dr. Jonathan Wharton from Southern. Microcosm of this whole thing, John, I think that first district race, the longtime incumbent, John Larson, Luke Bronin, maybe the heir apparent. Now, all of a sudden, Jillian Gilchrist saying, oh, wait a minute, us progressives have something to say here. That race, I think, is going to be fascinating, John.
Oh, I've been obsessed about it. It's no secret. You probably saw my column about that.
I didn't. I have to pull it. I got to find it
now.
Oh,
you missed it.
Yeah,
because I've been getting a lot of responses and attention about this, that it's not just John Larson, but so many members of the delegation are getting this internal competition among Democrats.
Yeah.
I think the unique thing for the Larson race is you're emphasizing is we're talking about multiple candidates.
Yeah.
Now that we've heard Gilchrist officially announced this mm-hmm. week that she's in it now, in my hometown state rep, West Hartford.
Oh, really?
And among others. Yeah, yeah. So this is fascinating to me with John Larson. For those who aren't familiar with him, he's been in Congress since 1990. Well, I interviewed for a job back then, so I can go to that. 98, 97, I think. So, obviously he didn't get the job.
Yeah.
But they don't like West Hartford people, I suppose. But, I'm mesmerized by this because the fact that we have so many people who are interested in putting their names forward on the Democratic ticket, what does that all mean for Larson? And I don't want to ignore, obviously, you know, Rosa DeLauro gained some competition, apparently, and, you know, and certainly there's talk, obviously, you know, for Courtney, too.
Really, Congressman Congressman Submarine may get challenged.
Right.
Wow,
that's been the talk. So yeah, I kind of spoke towards that in the Connecticut Post column a couple weeks back. This is intriguing to see the internal competition within the Democratic Party for Connecticut's delegation members.
I'll have to check that out. Dr. Jonathan Wharton, Southern Connecticut State University. John, always good to chat with you. We'll connect again in a few weeks. Thanks, John.
Sounds good. Thanks again,
Appreciate
Paul.
Appreciate it. Thanks, John. John getting all set for them. Well, he said now, no more freshmen. Now he's doing night classes because he's also been elevated to chairman of the sociology department. How about that, huh? You may have heard that there was an assault by an inmate or inmates on a state corrections officer, state corrections worker up there on Route 10 in Cheshire at the Cheshire Correctional Institution, and joining us to talk about what that job is like and what he's heard about the situation and any follow-up to that, Republican State Senate member Paul Ciccarello, representing parts of North Haven, East Haven, and Wallingford. Paul is the ranking Senate member on the Public Safety Committee in Hartford, and he is also a retired corrections officer, so it's a good thing we have him on today. Hey, Paul, it's Paul here. How are you, sir?
I am well, Paul. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Paul, tell us, before we get into this specific situation, how tough is it being, you did this for years, how tough is it to be a corrections officer in the state of Connecticut prison system?
Well, listen, it's a tough job for a lot of reasons. All law enforcement have a very, very tough job, whether it's missing your family's special events, holidays, you know, you're going towards an emergency or an incident where everybody else is running away. It's a tough job, but it got harder over the last 10 years for a lot of reasons. The respect for law enforcement is not there, and we need to bring that back for many reasons. But it's a very tough job. You know, they say the life expectancy after retirement for a corrections officer, law enforcement, is under 20 years.
Wow.
And that's terrible.
Did you have any run-ins, Paul, when you were working, or any dangerous situations that thankfully may have been diffused? Because I would imagine there are inmates at these facilities that are looking to cause trouble and inmates that are in there and they try not to cause trouble. But did you have any hairy situations of your own before we get to what exactly happened in Cheshire here?
Oh, yes. I remember one of the first shifts off of training when I was by myself.
Yeah.
Two inmates started stabbing each other.
Oh.
One person started stabbing, they started fighting. And it was just a crazy scene. We had to get in there and break it up. There was cell extractions. In the short time that I was on the job, I got hurt in an incident.
Yeah.
You see a lot of really crazy stuff there. The incident where I got hurt, it was just two people fighting and more of a freak thing when we, you know, went to tackle the individual down, ended up herniating two discs in my back. And we were in many, many other fights that were way worse, but mine was more of a freak situation. Yeah. But there were definitely some scary times, and, you know, these guys and girls have to do it for 20 years. And you're locked up in there in the facility. I talked to a lot of officers when I was on the job and now saying that there's so much, you know, being in there is part of the challenge of the job. And they would never want to do that. They'd want to stay on the street.
So, Paul, what are you guys and gals in the General Assembly waiting for now in a procedure here? Is there a report that comes from corrections here? I guess this was an attack on a corrections officer in Cheshire, I guess, on Monday that started with a hot coffee as a weapon here. What have you heard about this?
Yeah, so that's exactly what it was. Inmate was released out of the cell, went up to the bubble. That's basically where an officer is stationed to be able to open, close doors and monitor the area. And he threw hot coffee on the officer, and they got into a little of a tussle. He actually had a
A shank?
Some type of a, yep, it was a Bic pen with a piece of I believe it was a toenail clipper.
Shaved down.
On the edge.
Oh.
Yep.
Oh.
And my understanding is other responding officers also got hurt while trying to restrain the inmate that attacked the officer.
All right. So, Paul, obviously the state has insurance here, I would think, right? Are you guys and gals, are these officers covered for stuff like this if they have to miss time, medical expenses, all that? I mean, I know there's a psychological issue here, too, and a staffing issue, but does the state anticipate stuff like this happening, Paul, for lack of a better term? Is it kind of the cost of doing business here? It's a dangerous job.
Well, there's a lot of workman's comp claims because, you know, individuals are literally fighting, unfortunately, all too often, whether they're breaking up a fight or getting into an altercation, and they get hurt on the job and they have workman's comp. That's another whole conversation, but it's challenging to get certain care approved. Everything you need to get, maybe it's an MRI, you know, you have to get it approved, go through a process. It's something we should look at, that whole entire process. But it's definitely a cost to the Connecticut taxpayers because of all of the officers that go on workman's comp because of the unsafe working conditions in these facilities.
So what
it is a dangerous job.
Yeah. So, Paul, is it a staffing issue? I mean, I guess more people are always better than fewer. But can you tell us what's the staffing like? What do you hear from your contacts? Do we have enough men and women in the state's correctional system, Paul, or not?
No, law enforcement overall is hurting for recruitment.
Mm-hmm.
Recruitment and retention is a huge problem, and it's also there for the Department of Corrections, which means the officers that are there will get mandated and have to, you know, whether they want the overtime or not, they have to stay. And it is definitely a problem. But part of the problem we see, there was just something called the PROTECT Act that was passed a couple of years ago. And basically, if somebody's already in jail and they commit another crime, you know, the police could be called if it was a serious crime.
Yeah.
And, you know, years ago when I was there, if somebody assaulted an officer, they would. But talking to some of the officers, I guess it's becoming less and less frequent when there's an incident, whether it's drugs, and we could talk about that in a minute. We see a lot of situations where, you know, local municipalities are having to bring inmates for overdoses or whatever situation to the hospitals. It's becoming a problem there too, and affecting outside of the facility.
Yeah.
But there's a lack of consequences. There's no deterrent for assaulting an officer. Literally your punishment is 15 days in SEG, and it's not what you see on TV. It's not like you get thrown into a dark room and you don't eat. And no, it's not like that. You're basically, you just lose certain privileges.
Yeah.
But you still get a certain amount of rec time, you get shower, you know, there's lights, there's windows.
Yeah.
So it's not like what you see on TV. And the PROTECT Act basically took away the amount of time the Department of Corrections could put someone in SEG away from the general population.
Segregated,
and,
yeah.
Yep. So basically, you could only put them in for up to 15 days, which very rarely happens. And even in this situation, there would be a hearing, and there's a chance he won't get 15 days, and I have an upcoming meeting with the commissioner of DOC tomorrow, and I'll try to pay attention to that and see what happens. Mm. But you could only put someone in SEG for up to 30 days in a 60-day period.
Oh, I remember
so
this.
If someone, yeah, very, very bad. So if someone gets two consecutive 15-day punishments in SEG, they have 30 days where there will be zero consequences for their actions, and they know it. I've talked to intelligence officers who screen phone calls or hear them talking, you know, in general population, and they say they can't do anything to me. They know it, and people have them do certain things that they should.
You know, Paul, we have to break it up now because I'm against the time-wise. I'm going to have you back in a few days. I want to talk about the phone call thing and the drugs, so we'll do that down the road, all right?
Thank you, Paul. Have a great day.
State Senate member Paul Ciccarella there, looking after folks that do a job that he used to do as a corrections officer in Connecticut.